Peter R. Breggin, M.D., is called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform efforts. His scientific and educational work provide the foundation for modern criticism of drugs and ECT, and lead the way in promoting more caring and effective therapies. His books include Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, Medication Madness, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and now, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour.
Oh, hello, my wonderful audience. I always tell you, you're in for a treat because we carefully select people for the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour. But Diana West, who you are looking at, has had as profound an intellectual impact on me, I think, as anyone. Maybe anyone in certainly the last few decades. And that's because of two books. The main book I want to hold up right now is American Betrayal. The subtitle is The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. And this book is about the very short sentence, the communist undermining with collaboration from many too many Americans during the World War II era and thereafter. Then she has another book, and this is how we met her, because see, this is before I got so politically involved in global issues. And this was a book that Ginger found, Death of the Grown-Up. If you read these two books, you will undoubtedly be more aware of what's going on than you've ever been. The subtitle is How America's Arrested Development is Bringing Down Western Civilization. So here we have a sociologic examination with real intelligence and enormous research, a kind of deep dive that Ginger and I do into first, the corruption of family life, the destruction of the father, the reduction of serious moral values in America, and the result in the kind of situation we're in now. And then in American Betrayal, we learn about the globalist background to all of this, the global level. That's her second book. And I want to read you two quotes and keep COVID-19 in mind. One of them, she puts at the top of a chapter, and it's by Solzhenitsyn. It is as if the West actually does not want to know the truth until the moment when this knowledge has ceased to be of use. Now, Solzhenitsyn was a Russian author who wrote about the Gulag and was thrown out of Russia and came to live in America in isolation, basically, who just mourned what he was seeing in America as he saw us going in the same direction, and almost no one on earth would listen to him. Diana West listened to him. And then I want to read you the end of chapter 3. And keep in mind Solzhenitsyn's idea that we don't want to face things. The pretense will endure as long as we allow it to, until the point arrives which we will finally dare to face the logical implications of these newly mined, polished, glittering, glaring, blinding facts. By the way, if I'd been a better author, I would have written those sentences for COVID-19 and the global predators. These newly mined, polished, glittering, glaring, blinding facts. And then she says, their implications being what precisely? Their implication being that for many crucial years, American statecraft was an instrument of Soviet strategy. Now, what does our book, me and Ginger, the COVID-19 and the global predators about? We did not know it, but I had already read American Betrayal. See, I'd read it. I haven't thought about it for present time very clearly, but I'd read it, and it was, I'd read it again and kept it to, by my side and read pages of it, thinking, how could a country be so undermined? How could our President Roosevelt be so under the influence of communists who later, after the wall came down, would be found to be traitors, carefully documented in Russian documents, KGB documents? How could that happen? Well, when I started looking into Global 19, Ginger 2, we had no idea that that was going to lead to not Russian influence, but the Chinese Communist Party's influence in a collaboration between the Chinese Communists, the World Health Organization, the UN, Bill Gates, Charles Schwab, the whole medical industrial complex that tries to find a new way to govern the world. And so would I have come to that without being prepared, or would I have just backed off and said, no, this is conspiracy theory, I'm going to back off from this? So thank you, Diane West, for your amazing influence on my thinking, on Ginger's thinking. And now I'm going to be quiet and give you the mic. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Bregenhauer.
Well, thank you so much, Peter, for that generous and truly, truly marvelous introduction. And it is thrilling to hear you say how deeply this material affected you. That is any author, as you know, any author's dream, that the things that you come to and seem so important to get out there so that people take note and take warning, to actually see that coming to pass. So thank you so much for reading, for being such a wonderful reader, and then taking it forward in your own work. That is just fantastic. And I'm very happy to be with you today. There's so much to talk about. I don't know where to start. It's every day I will say that even having done this research and really lived it in many ways, just because it's such a presence once you get into this kind of research that is always hidden from the public view, at least in obvious terms, it does sort of become your constant companion, which is not very nice. Even with all of that behind me, trying to grapple with the scale of the evil that we are subjected to at this point, not just at the hands of the Kremlin or Beijing, but of our own government. I mean, this, and governments, the governments throughout the formerly free world, is really a daily challenge. So we can go through some of that together, perhaps. But it's something I think a lot of people have trouble connecting and actually getting past their traditional belief or their normal belief, or because they're good people belief, that the government, the authorities, the medical establishment, et cetera, would ever have anything but their own best interests at heart. And I think that, you know, we are looking at evil, and that is sort of at the base of all such conspiracies. So that's something to bear in mind as well.
Did you go through periods of time when you were writing where you just could not bear it? It just felt like you were being overwhelmed by some darkness that was unbearable and you didn't want to go on?
That's a great question. Yes and no, because I think what was exciting about this extremely destabilizing research that was, you know, every day flipping everything I had previously learned and believed, I was also the thrill of discovery was part of it, but also discovering along the way truly heroic figures who in real time had been telling the truth, losing their careers over it, losing their health over it, dying over it. I mean, you also are uncovering the good along with the evil of the past. And so in that sense, there became this sense of desire to vindicate heroes in our past, people who should be in our pantheon and who are not, So I think it became sort of a dual process. But yes, I would say that the shock of discovery was profound. And then it also did I called it investigative history. As a writer, as a citizen, you know, trying to uncover the past, there was also a sense of excitement that led me forward. But the horrors I did not expect to find. And then at a certain point, you start seeing patterns and realizing how outlying facts you may have learned along the way. For example, my father was a novelist. He was a conservative in Hollywood. We could do a whole show about his life in that milieu. But one book he came across in about 1980 had to do, it was called The Secret Betrayal by Nikolai Tolstoy, who is a descendant of the great Tolstoy. And it was all about the, quote, repatriation of millions of citizens who had fled the Soviet Union, maybe going back to the revolution itself, but certainly in the World War II period, and who did not wish to return to this totalitarian state of Stalin. And The Secret Betrayal documents the American and British help and enablement of this terrible repatriation of millions of people who then died, were killed outright or died in the gulag later on. That book in 1980 or thereabouts, my father was working on a novel around that period. He was a veteran of World War II and was working on a World War II type novel involving this repatriation, which was part of the late and post-war period. Anyway, I read the book and I believed the book, but it didn't connect with other things that I knew of history, or I thought I knew of history, or I thought I knew of conventional wisdom. So once you are more deeply in that milieu of trying to, you know, really revise, it is a revisionist type of history making, things start to connect, and all of a sudden Tolstoy's book is no longer an outlier. It's part of a pattern. And it's very dark and it is disturbing. And I'm sure it's marked me and marked my personality in some ways, just having had that experience, you know, a Cassandra-like experience. So it's an interesting process to go through, and it's very sad. But again, that you are always buoyed by the great courage and heroism of not just the famous ones, but people along the way doing their best, and of course, you know, courageously serving what they thought was their country and all the rest of it. So it's very much a mixed bag, but very important to do. And I've always felt that the truth is what we have to seek, regardless of what it tells us.
Yeah. Well, you can see, folks, from listening to Diana talk, that this is all about COVID-19 as much as it's about World War II, and that the agendas of other people in World War II, many of them Americans, was about globalism, global power, supposedly for the greater good under communism. And now we are looking at something very identical under the guise of public health.
Yes.
And every day now, Ginger and I keep mining up the fact that COVID-19 was a plan, literally a plan, just like a lot of what happened in the World War II, the failure, for example, to prevent the Holocaust in any way. I mean, Roosevelt knew about the Holocaust. I think his wife, maybe you can fill me in more on that, tried to tell him that something had to be done. We could bomb the railroads, you could bomb the gas chambers, you could do something to make it much more difficult for them, bomb the railroads. There was a lot that could be done. And it would have slowed their war effort because they were determined to kill all the Jews. So they would have had to keep rebuilding and doing their best. And he wouldn't do it because he didn't want to make it a Jewish war, supposedly. And in fact, I think that probably he was very much also under the influence of the communists, because they had as great atrocities as Hitler. And they were just luxuriating. And you point this out, communists were luxuriating in how we were calling Hitler the greatest evil in the world. Stalin's killing even more people.
Right.
I mean, so much changes when I look at it and rethink things in light of your book. And I can't even tell what's your book and just my merging ideas about the Nuremberg trials and how, what a farce, what an evil thing it was to have Russia joining us to prosecute the Nazis when they were ongoing killing millions of people in their own country, including Jews.
Right. And had been in cahoots with the Nazis on the exact same crimes that the Nazis were being tried on in terms of making war and so on in their period of alliance with Nazi Germany. So they were not only sitting in judgment while they were doing things, they were sitting on judgment on crimes that they actually were perpetrating, kind of fits in with the notion of so much that we see as the public, as citizens, in the arena of deflection, in the arena of stagecraft. So much of what we follow to this day, and again, having to do with the whole COVID world, has to do with kind of bright, shiny objects that we are supposed to be very concerned about, while other much more nefarious, dark schemes are underway. And I was really struck by something that a Spanish researcher recently told to Reiner Fulmich. I know you were interviewed recently by him as well. And she, I think, preceded you speaking about the Bilderberg group and their influence on the COVID policies and so on. But she was talking about the rise of these supranational organizations that now control us, negating our national governments, basically. And she was saying that so long as media in countries, in individual countries, focus only on these sort of approved domestic topics, the uncovered stories of the rise of these supranational entities, these, you know, whether it's the World Health Organization or the Gates Foundation or the, you know, World Economic Forum, these kinds of entities, and the power that they're sucking in, the United Nations, of course, it will just continue, and they essentially plant themselves right atop our national structures, and no one knows anything about it. And you can test the media for yourself and see how you can talk about critical race theory all day long in a parents' meeting in a school district somewhere. You can talk all day long about the infrastructure bill or something like that. But can you talk about the injuries people are suffering from vaccines in the mainstream media? Not done. Can you talk about any of the planning that you're referring to that went into the whole, quote, scamdemic? The origins of lockdown coming from the Chinese Communist Party, never before done on any, to healthy populations, never before in human history had anyone treated an illness by locking down healthy people, testing healthy people, all the rest of it. It all emanates from Chinese Communist Party. Is any of that covered in mainstream media? No. It's this focus on these sort of approved domestic problems, or sometimes they're global warming, things like that. But the actual threat to personal, political, and now extremely personal sovereignty is not discussed. And it kind of gives them license to go forward with these plans. And I think right now we're in a period of manifestation, obviously, that 10 years ago, or even when American Betrayal came out, was much more theoretical. I mean, we could talk about these things more. We could talk about history more. I feel like right now, a lot of these, the backstory or the pre-story is almost beside the point. You know, where the danger to us at this moment is acute. And it's something that certainly our media and our political leaders are ignoring. So it's a very difficult bind that we find ourselves in. And that's why I'm so happy to talk to you today, because it's a lot of information out to people.
In the last 2 days, we got an affirmation of the basic themes of our book that was more than we ever expected. And Ginger found that after World War II, in the 50s and around that period of time, Klaus Schwab, who is the head, you've mentioned, the World Economic Forum, and who is the author of the concept of the Great Reset, which is actually, I view the Great Reset as bringing together the progressive predators with the capitalist predators, with the communist predators, and Xi Jinping, and making some kind of governance out of them. Yeah. And one of the things that I wondered about in the book at times is what idea of governance did they have? They wanted to do away with the nationalism. They want to do away especially with America's patriotic nationalism, because it wouldn't allow the global reset where boundaries are destroyed and so Americans are working for the same price as nearly slave labor in China or people in Africa, so that corporations could go anywhere unfettered and exploit whatever place they wanted to be. This Great Reset is about exploitation with the corporations, the governments, the philanthropic groups, and so on. And I kept thinking, but what's the governance? What's the governance? And I also kind of didn't take World Health Organization seriously. I mean, it's all in the book, but it didn't get in totally seriously. And then what I've realized in the last couple of days is the World Health Organization stands for the UN. It's an agency of the UN. And people like Schwab know Americans will have nothing to do with the UN. They know it's a corrupt mixture of fascism and communism, all the worst dictators in the world, all the really an evil organization. So American citizens aren't going to do anything that's to do with the UN. So what they decided back in the 50s was to work through the World Health Organization. And then when Bill Gates gets out of his short pants or is born and grows up, Schwab is there to work with him in announcing all of his big programs, which we describe in detail in the book, which no one else has described, in which they're planning with the World Health Organization and other groups to basically take over the world in the next pandemic. And we give all the documents for that. And then finally, Schwab comes out and says, and the method of governance will be through the World Health Organization. And he says, the World Health Organization has a constitution. It's the constitution. So I've now printed out, this is last night. I didn't know it had a constitution that they would impose on people. Uh-huh. And I've got, I think, 250 pages we printed out last night. And of course, there's nothing in it about freedom. There's nothing in it about America's shining example for decades and decades, couple hundred years of democracy mixed with a republic that sustains human freedom. Nothing about any of that. It's all about the rights of those in power to do what they think is best.
Right.
And that, folks, has been the world since we had big villages. We've always had, after we got through actually going through an evolution as extended families roaming the world and hunting and fishing and gathering and raising our kids in big extended families, mostly big ones. After we got in villages, we always had people who were doing what was best for us, but really to maintain their own power. And it doesn't matter whether we have the modern Hitlers, Mussolinis, and Stalins, and Xi Jinpings. We had, we had Alexander, we had Caesar, we had the empires, we had the Chinese empires, we had Genghis Khan, and so on. So we've always had this, but then came this shining light of America, and we fought the UN. The people didn't want it. They didn't want the League of Nations, and now they didn't want the UN. And now by means, and this was planned, they document in the book, they plan to use a pandemic and to use the World Health Organization and its governance to actually be ultimately the UN collaborating with and being run by the predators.
Right. That's amazing. And that plan goes back to...
he starts it, I think, in the early 1948 there. They're having meetings in New York City with Klaus Schwab, the World Economic Forum, and the World Health Organization, and like 50 countries signing on. Yeah. And not a one of these countries is Western. I just saw from last night, not a one of these countries is Western.
Yeah.
So it's like last night, I sort of finally put it together. And it's not like UN's going to run things. It's going to be the conglomerate of who's in charge of the global predators. And right now, folks, that's the Chinese Communist Party. They're going to eat up everybody else if we get destroyed by the global predators. Bill Gates and Schwab and Michael Bloomberg and practically all the American billionaires have their way in big tech companies. They'll be doing more business with China than with us. And then the Chinese can take over. And they don't even realize what's going to happen to them, I don't think. But folks, I just announced to you a worldview that finally makes sense. And we just most completely just recently put it together with realizing or finding these videos of these discussions and this constitution from the World Health Organization. It's not a scientific body, folks. It's the tool of totalitarianism and has been since at least the end of World War II.
That's when it was founded. And I remember reading about, there was his name escapes me, but the first head of the World Health Organization was a Canadian. And I've seen newspaper stories from probably around 1948 or thereabouts when it was stood up, talking about world government, talking about a world police force, talking about all these ideas that you're saying were placed into their constitution. And one thing that really interested me recently, Peter, is that I know through my career some very accomplished and even senior intelligence professionals, now retired. And these were men who fought the Cold War. They fought the Soviet Union. They fought communists. They actually are anti-communists as opposed to most of the CIA, no doubt. But I recently was speaking to one and I was asking him, and this is someone who's debriefed many of the most famous defectors and all, you know, vast experience. Did you ever see any of this coming in through health or takeover through public health? And he did not. And how could he? Because again, it almost feels like so much, it's hard to imagine everything being thought through to that extent, but certainly the way it worked was so much of our energies were always diverted to fighting something that we prevented or was not going to take us down head on, but was always coming in through back doors like World Health Organization. Always so boring. I had to take a science when I was getting out of Yale. I needed a science at the end and I forgot I needed it. And I ended up in this world health class. And it was so boring. I barely went to class, I think. Shouldn't confess that now. But it was the kind of thing where it felt like such a backwater if you were interested in current affairs and politics and English and all these things, unless you were, you know, going into the medical world, obviously, where I was not. But it's so ironic to me that someplace that our best minds were not looking all this time was gradually gaining strength, gradually pulling, marshaling their efforts, setting these structures, supranational structures up that we weren't really looking at, and are most people anyway. I don't know of anyone who was looking at it along the way. I'm sure there are some people who are sounding the alarm, but I haven't unearthed them yet. But it's a strange thing. But then on the other hand, it's such a natural thing because fear-mongering on somebody's actual sense of survival, of self-preservation, must be considered, well, you would be able to speak to this, you know, kind of the mother lode of gaining manipulation over a human being. And so maybe that should have been more obvious to us. I will say that I don't totally throw out the Kremlin in all of this, even though, of course, we see China everywhere, insofar as I feel that China and Russia are still operating to some degree in tandem. They have numerous accords. They have numerous trade and military agreements that have been mounting really over the years. And they were both very upset at, for example, President Trump's signature issue of trade, breaking up that quote free trade system, which as you alluded to has so much to do with but breaking down boundaries, breaking down national identities, allowing corporations to roam the world, et cetera. And further, when you go back to the Obama-Clinton years and you see their reset, remember they had a reset, and that was with Moscow. And what happened during those reset years under Obama and Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State was a massive tech transfer. Very few people have studied, known as Skolkovo. Skolkovo was a Silicon Valley, was supposed to be the Silicon Valley outside of Moscow, and it is. And the reason I bring it up is you may have seen headlines recently about Russia's success with hypersonic missiles. They're firing them off, you know, successfully. And the U.S. Army warned, about going back to, say, 2012 or so, warned that this tech transfer hub known as Skolkovo, which had many of the major American technological companies investing in, and the Clinton Foundation, which is always de rigueur, but they were very concerned about the dual use of the technology that the Obama administration was allowing to go to Russia. And they specifically warned about this kind of hypersonic missile technology, which has now further strengthened Russia's forces, which are quite formidable, particularly in the nuclear category. So I feel like the two of them are in tandem, even if certainly China is the big bad cop. But that's just sort of a hunch. That's sort of just a hunch that it's not only China, but
no,
certainly—
No, it's more than a hunch. I think that's very good for you to bring it in, because nobody knows this as well as you do. Nobody in the world, I don't think.
Well, it's, you know, you kind of have to have been looking at it for a long time. And then, you know, again, these patterns are clear, but it's I think we also have to focus also on, and you alluded to this in your introduction, the Americans who are part and party of the same destruction of our country. We see the same type of nationals in Britain and France and other countries where you see the elites at the top, native born, you know, completely of their own countries. And yet they do seem to be serving a supranational master. And I was struck by this. There's an Irish writer by the name of John Waters. Ireland is very much a dictatorship, a health dictatorship right now, with the health passport being implemented and all the rest. And he was talking about the police who enforce these things. And he was really saying these are not police of the people. These are police of an occupying force at this point, because that is sort of the logical next step. If you're looking at these global predators, well, they have law enforcement and security enforcement in the various global countries of the globe, of the earth, of the world. And the allegiance of these elites and their forces is not to the people. And so that is a new way for most of us to actually regard the security agencies. People have been learning a lot about the FBI to that end, the CIA for many years and so on. But you're also your local police, many of whom we want to support, but the ones who are enforcing lockdown rules, or, you know, look to Australia for, you know, just literally the army enforcing lockdown. And none of this is, of course, being covered in media. It's a very, again, more destabilization along the lines of American betrayal to actually think about your fellow countrymen no longer serving your country.
We live in that world now here, yeah. You know, something you said is so important. I think the folks of you, just stay with us on this. You're going to be learning so much. And one of the things that, comparisons that just occurred to me between your area where you're working in so deeply, and now you're getting into COVID-19 too, but your work in the West versus the Kremlin turning out to be sort of a collaborative effort, with the Kremlin secretly winning. First, it's always been the goal of communism to undermine America rather than confront us in a war, because they always knew we had too big an army, we were too adamant, we were about military affairs, we were too isolated with the oceans on either side of us, that they weren't going to win a land war against the U.S. So they always looked for something else. And Russia, of course, with the missiles, getting the technology for us, from us, from the earliest atomic weapons to now these hypersonic missiles. Well, the analogy is that China decided that we document this in the book, that the most effective weapons were going to be biologic, because first of all, they don't mind a lot of their people dying, and they have so many people. What they really want is countries that have their structure in place. They don't want to destroy the world, pollute it with the things that corrupt, all of nature, the atomic weapons. And so they favored the biological weapons. And but you have to, at the same time, at least for your elite, to be developing the vaccines. So it's biological weapons and developing the vaccines. And then what I found was there was a hub for the transfer of technology in the U.S. Ginger and I found this. The transfer of technology on the building of these weapons and these vaccines, biological weapons and vaccines, and it was the National Institutes of Health, and in particularly NIAID under Fauci. And we discovered that Fauci was funding, we discovered by looking at scientific papers that Ginger initially uncovered from 5 years earlier, five years before SARS-CoV-2, that we were making SARS-CoV pathogens with the Russians. With the Chinese.
Yeah.
And in fact, that Fauci lied to the Senate. Fauci was funding this gain of function, how to make more deadly viruses. He was actually funding top Chinese scientists, top science experimental programs, all through the Wuhan Institute, while he's funding programs in the U.S., particularly University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. So it's the same thing again. We have all these Americans developing technology, in this case, directly working with the communists on the protein sword, the thing we put on the spike protein that we put on, well, protein spike that we put on onto the SARS-CoV virus. So in the paper, there's an acknowledgement thanking the so-called Batwoman of China for her help in sending them materials that helped the U.S. people at Chapel Hill put the protein spike onto a SARS-CoV. And well, this is 5 years before. Mm-hmm. So it was immediately obvious to us that this thing came out of China. I mean, it came from the Chinese lab, and it was right around the Wuhan lab that it came out, and that they'd been working with the U.S., whether it was leak or purposeful, there was no question where it came from. They'd been making these damn viruses for years with the U.S., yeah. And that we had a load of them, and they had a load of SARS-CoV viruses. It's again so similar, and it goes back to some sort of part of the of this whole communist socialist trend, which has said that we're a world movement, and we know what's best for the world, and we're an elite, and it doesn't matter exactly what we call ourselves, because Bill Gates calls himself a capitalist, but he's a part of the same elite of we know what's best for the world. And that's what we're up against now. And again, what our elite don't realize is that as we empower the Chinese communists, they're not gonna last once China takes over. But that's what we're facing. Does it make sense to you? We're facing a communist Chinese empire, and they'll carve it up probably with Russia and give some chunk of it to North Vietnam and a few other places. Not Vietnam, excuse me, North Korea and a few other places.
Yeah, well, that's certainly something that they have been wargaming in their own strategies for quite some time, how to carve up America and the rest of the world. So it's not at all far-fetched, and the more we see things fall into place, the more real it becomes. My own feeling has, I am less afraid of the Chinese, though, than I am of the American traders and the government itself, now mandating these injections, now trying to force businesses to force these injections, looking at, you know, the UK government, literally now, I think it was just this week, signing on, they were supposed to be debating whether they would have this digital health passport on their phones. And I think it was just in the last few days that they just suddenly popped up and told people that their NHS app on their smartphones would suddenly transform into a new kind of health passport that could be used at establishments that are following this new health passport.
Wow, I didn't know that. Oh, God.
Yes, it's pretty much breaking news. Just a couple of days, and of course, we don't have a media, so we have to tell each other these things.
Now, we've been finishing the book, so we're a little tuned out for a day.
Well, I don't think it's out there very much. I saw quickly before I came to you, I was watching a snippet of Polly St. George through the wonderful Canadian research known as Amazing Polly. And she was reading from some British organ of some kind, talking about this kind of backdoor, by the way, folks, we are going forward with health passports, but we didn't really have a debate or anything else. And we've signed a gigantic contract with some company called Entrust, which I'm sure is a very interesting company to do so. So we're watching this come in, and of course, none of it has anything to do with our health. You know, that's kind of, again, becomes the focal point for, understandably, Americans and their families wondering about their health. But it's actually, there couldn't be anything farther from the epicenter of concern of these agendas than any individual's health. We are expendable. We are part of this vast experiment and this, the you know, you try to figure out, well, what's really going on? And you read about some researchers have been writing about the culling of the elderly that appears to have been part of this program. And there's quite a lot of evidence of that, or the effort to sterilize.
Yeah, we talk about that in the book. I mean, it just was so hard to face all this.
It really is, but it's happening. And then the greatest crime I think that's happening in American media, which is supposed to be our voice, and of course our leaders, who literally we put there to represent us, I think the greatest crime right now is the crime of suppression and neglect of the vaccine deaths and the vaccine injured.
Absolutely.
Because the numbers are mounting, and the stories, because we still do have a fairly gatekeeperless Wild West internet outside of the major platforms, you know, outside of Twitter and Facebook and so on, the Brighteons and the other places, and even TikTok, strangely, as a Chinese entity, Telegram, etc. You're seeing, and websites, individual websites that are trying to be support groups for the vaccine injured, you are actually can see in real time the effects of this growing, I don't think the word is overblown, Holocaust of victims. And that is being ignored, much as what we call the first Holocaust of Jews in Germany was ignored in the media. And of course, it started slowly, right? We didn't have the mass millions of deaths until the latter years of the war. It starts with smaller numbers, maybe 10,000 here, 50,000 here. These are the numbers we're seeing according to the CDC. Yeah.
By the way, first time I've interrupted you, because it strikes me that the Holocaust, of course, begins with medicine, with a medical program, the euthanasia program of German psychiatry.
Wow, I hadn't thought of that, Peter.
Yeah, I've written an article, wrote one of the first articles in English about that, and I actually was asked to come to Germany in the 80s to talk about the origins of the Holocaust in the euthanasia program, which is a organized murder program by psychiatry in Germany, which actually invented the gas chambers, invented the crematoriums, but very primitive gas chambers. They even have wooden soap and the fake showers. And they had about 8 euthanasia centers around Germany. Sonnenstein, Hadamar, places people haven't heard of the way they had the other camps. And those morphed into the extermination camps for the Jews.
Yeah.
So again, it's interesting, and I hadn't put that together. It's so good to talk to you, because that's a medical wedge again.
Yeah.
that, and it was not constructed by Hitler. The theories began to be published in 1920 by the psychiatrists and the lawyers.
Fascinating. That's very interesting. It reminds me of something else, which we may be seeing an uptick of as well, which was, of course, when the gulags became counterproductive, if you will, and people were released, many of them were released, you saw the trend in Soviet Union towards psychiatric imprisonment.
Yes. Yeah, psychiatry's always been there as the arm of oppression.
Right. And this was something that Vladimir Bukovsky was subjected to, psychiatric imprisonment. Yeah. And he was able to smuggle out the information about what was going on in the early 1970s before he was actually released. But I remember he died a couple of years ago. I remember he was very concerned about what was going on in Russia with the emergence, again, of people, political people being put into you're starting to see that, I'm afraid, regarding people who don't wish to be vaccinated. They're going to be, I fear, considered crazy, in need of psychiatric treatment, and we may see that becoming the kind of global predator answer, in big quotation marks.
So important.
Yeah, to this problem. So this is a thread that I think you've just laid there that's really important, I think, to be aware of and reject. Absolutely.
Yeah, and they're starting to name call similar to the way the Jews were spoken of.
Yes.
They're saying we're menaces if we don't get if we don't take the jab. What are some of the other words? Menaces, that we're a threat.
Stupid.
And stupid.
Is also threats, selfish. You're selfish. Yeah. This is very interesting and dangerous because I was thinking this week, it just suddenly occurred to me. It used to be that politicians to the right and to the left always flattered the American people, the infinite wisdom of the American people.
Yeah, not anymore.
Right, that is gone. And I peg that to the Obama years. I think it comes out where Obama began to make race. He really lays the seeds of Black Lives Matter. Remember when he talked about his grandmother as a typical white person? Couldn't help racism, and that, and he's elected. So he's talking about still the majority European-based people in this country, still the majority population, and he is hectoring them as racist.
Mm-hmm.
You go forward to the first Trump election, campaign election, and you see it raised to such a level. If you support the Trump policies, you are to be demonized. And I think we're just seeing a continuation of that demonization of a massive segment of the population that once upon a time, you know, would have been called, would have been always flattered, even if their politicians were corrupt and lying to us, we were always sacrosanct. And now we're not. And I think you have to start considering what I think it's Dr. Stanton, I believe is his name, has for the 10 stages of genocide. And so much of it has, the early stages are separation, demonization, you know, which involves the name calling, the separate laws. I mean, what is a health passport but separate laws? How is that not Nuremberg style laws? So, I mean, we are looking at this writ large. And again, we have to come to grips with it because our leaders in the media are not. They're hiding it. So it's, you know, couldn't be more alarming, really. You know, are we in the calm before the storm?
Well, actually, no, we're more in a storm. Maybe we're in the eye of the storm. It feels calm.
Right.
The storm has hit us already, and it's a little halcyon time in a way right now, and it's going to get worse and worse.
Right. I guess, you know, I never thought I'd be nostalgic for last year when at least they weren't chasing us with a syringe. I mean, it's... Yeah.
It's very interesting. One of the other breaking things, I mean, this is a nice discussion because you and I are both bringing up very, very recent things, is the, again, part of Ginger's unearthing yesterday of Klaus Schwab's history with the World Health Organization. And years before the epidemic, Schwab was saying, we will have to vaccinate everyone. That, I mean, it's practically a quote. And what's behind that is we have to do everyone. We have to have everyone obedient. We have, and of course, we're going to make a fortune in the process and becomes a, you know, dominant force within the world for leading the totalitarian state with our health programs. But it's just astonishing that you go back and you look at all that and the plan is as it was constructed years ago.
And do you think he's the mastermind? Or a mastermind?
I think he is the intellectual voice.
Yeah.
They call him that. You know, and his book came out right in the middle of the summer of COVID-19 in July, June or July. And it's called COVID-19 and the Great Reset. He is saying that COVID-19 allows us to do the reset, COVID-19 and the Great Reset. And then shortly after, Great Reset is also adopted openly by Joe Biden as he's getting ready to take the presidency, and by Kerry, who would be his climate czar. Because the climate issue is very similar to the, pandemic issue. Folks, I think we are very gently tying together today things with a bit more clarity maybe than it's been done before. I'm not sure, but I think it's getting clearer and clearer. And Ginger and I have just been working so hard on this, and so have you. I mean, you and I and Ginger were deep divers. And not too many people had to do it. I did the deepest dive ever done on the corruption of the pharmaceutical industry and psychiatry and the corruption of my profession. And you did the deepest dive ever on something that just makes what I did like a shallow swim, which is the communist infiltration of the American community and the American government. And of course, other people inspired us, and other people, M. Stanton Evans, you mentioned. And mm-hmm. By the way, he was also a friend to us. He was one of the few people who had any public name who was supporting my anti-lobotomy campaign.
Ah. Way back. Interesting. When was that?
1970s, early 70s.
Oh, okay.
He was probably a fairly young and robust man. He's gone now, folks. Oh, but
yes. Yes, yes, it would have been. Yes, That's interesting.
Well, we have only a few minutes left. I mean, we're going to, I would say we have about 8 minutes at the most. Anything that's being left out here, especially about connecting your deepest dive at all with what you're doing with COVID-19 now, because that's where we are, and folks are interested in that, and I am, and
Well, I would say that when you examine these drives toward dictatorships that we can describe as communist or socialist, places where the citizen and personal rights and sovereignty are no longer prized, you see rhetoric in terms of the collective good. You know, that's how they sugarcoat their grasp for power.
Yes.
And their elimination of all of your God-given rights. The collective good. And what is so alarming right now is that, particularly in this push to vaccinate, you are hearing a lot about the collective good.
Oh boy.
That is not what America was founded to perpetuate. It wasn't about the collective good.
No.
None of our founding documents are constructed to negate the rights of the individual. And this is something, you know, in fact, the Bill of Rights makes that very clear. And so this is something we need to be very aware of and very concerned about and push back against, because it sounds nice, just as people who are beguiled by communist rhetoric in the past would think they were doing something good for, quote, humanity, even as they're, you know, completely destroying the rights of their neighbor or their child. It was always for something distant like humanity. And then the other point that I think is connected to that, and more in your line of thinking and what you've been doing in your career, is the importance of empathy is really lost in these same drives for collective good.
No, and totally lost.
Totally lost. And I think that is really at the base of the suppression and demonization of news about the people suffering from these vaccination injuries. I mean, It is profound what is going on. To ordinary people think they're doing the right thing for themselves or their family or their community or the collective good, and then they end up as a chronic medical mystery, suffering. It's a chamber of horrors that does harken back to a Nazi kind of experimentation. It's incredible what's going on, let alone the deaths. And I think that one reason that we are being denied this discussion in the mainstream media and by our political leaders is that there is required this suppression of empathy to go forward in terms of anything having to do with the so-called Great Reset, this fear of rights, this negation of our liberties, this effort to control, as we haven't mentioned her. I don't know if you're familiar with the late Rosa Corey. She was a tremendous researcher and voice against Agenda 21, which is one of these blueprints for world domination.
Rosa Corey,
K-O-I-R-E. And she wrote a very important book that derived from her own experience called Behind the Green Mask, all about Agenda 21, which she encountered on the ground level in California when she was a property evaluator or some such. She got very involved and then learned the whole thing and was she made wonderful videos. Unfortunately, she died just a couple of months ago, just as I was getting to know her. But she just to bring her up, she was making it very clear that these plans are about controlling every person, every blade of grass, every seed. Yeah. Every word. That's what the blueprint is, whether it's from World Health or from the UN, the Agenda 21, which America signed on to under George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton in that sort of interim period from one to the other, going back to 1992-93. And this is, again, another iteration of what we're seeing coming to pass. So the more we know about each other and our suffering, and we take care of each other, the more I think we also have a chance of resisting this horror known as collective good, which is just a name for totalitarianism.
Yeah, and just to be even-handed, which you are, George Bush introduced to America the idea of the New World Order. He used those words. He talked about New World Order. Not America First. That's the opposite of America First. Right. America First is about the individual. It's about individual freedom, political freedom, standing up for liberty, Judeo-Christian traditions and religions. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, Diana West, we're getting near the end, and I'm going to have the last word by giving you the last word.
Thank you. This
book, look at that book, folks. I have never pushed a book this hard in my life, other than my own. American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on the Nation's Character. If you read this along with our book, COVID-19, The Global Predators, you will have an amazingly deeper understanding of what's going on in the world. You will hear the depth of this somewhat informal conversation, unplanned. Now, I will talk about my book last, just briefly, or Ginger will be very mad at me. So Peter Bregan and Ginger Bregan's book, COVID-19 and the Global Research, said, you can get the information I've been communicating to you today by going and buying the book, because we've done something authors have never done before that we know of. We immediately put in your mailbox the latest manuscript. And that's why we've been selling this book for several months, knowing that we had a lot of work to do and that we couldn't wait to tell people what was going on. So in addition to sending the manuscript out to various people in the country and in Europe and so on, if you buy the book, and the way you buy the book, you can go to the website, bregan.com, but we have a very special website, wearethepray.com. If you go to wearethepray.com, you can buy our book, and we will plant the manuscript, and you can just look at that manuscript for a few weeks until we get you the book, because the book will be coming out in a matter of weeks now. But you're going to get the last word again. Read this, and you'll just have a better knowledge of this whole picture. So thank you, Diana, for being on the show. Thank you for educating me and Ginger about stuff that was so horrendous that we didn't want to know about it at first. And thank you for your good spirit, because you see, folks, you can do this deep dive, serious work, and you can be a happy person. really can be, because you're doing, I think, because you're doing God's work. I don't know what Diana thinks about that.
That sounds good. Thank you so good. Very good. And I can't wait to read your book.
Okay. Well, you've got it sitting. We just sent it off to you. You've got it in your mailbox. And thank you so much. And this is a show I hope folks you'll send to other folks. Bye-bye now.